Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, and today we're going to talk about how attorneys can use PR to help their cases, but at the same time, also market their practices so that they can grow. And speaking on the show today, our guest is Wayne Pollack. Wayne is the founder and managing attorney of Copo Strategies, a legal services and communications firm. Wayne serves as a consultant to law firms or as co-counsel to clients. And he helps lawyers ethically, strategically, and proactively tell their clients' stories and their own stories to the media and other key audiences. Wayne's counsel is a unique blend of legal strategy, media strategy, ethics compliance, and defamation avoidance. Welcome to the show, Wayne.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I'm a subscriber, and every episode is full of great information. I hope that I can continue the trend with this one.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to hear that you're a subscriber and that you like our show, and we're delighted to have you on the show. So thank you for agreeing to be on the show today. So let's talk a little bit. It's really interesting topic, and I don't really know anyone that has really talked about this before. How to use PR, how lawyers can use PR to help their cases, but also market their practices. But before we dive in, tell me a little bit more about yourself. So you're a lawyer. How did you shift to this? How did you, find this niche in a sense? Tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, well, I was a big law attorney for 6.5 years at Deckert here in Philadelphia. And prior to my time at Deckert and law school, I worked in public relations for 4 years. And while I was at Deckert, certainly toward the end of those 6.5 years, I started to see a pattern. I started to see attorneys more and more not quite understanding how they could use public relations and publicity in their practices to actually help them resolve their clients' cases favorably, no matter what side of the case they were on. We all know public relations and media relations as a tool for marketing, and it's widely used by law firms, large and small alike. But many attorneys don't understand that they could actually use publicity and public relations to help their clients actually win their cases and prevent their clients from having the kind of reputational and business damage that often comes with litigation. So I saw this more and more. I looked around. I said, surely there are attorneys who do this kind of work, who can provide counsel that mixes legal strategy and media strategy. I didn't really find any. Certainly there are PR people who know media relations and work in the legal space. But the ones that I talked to didn't know about the implications of doing this kind of work, or even were familiar with the ethics side of the work. And I said, oh no, I'm going to have to start my own firm, aren't I? So I did what any, sane big law associate would do, which is I left my wonderfully intellectually stimulating and lucrative position at a big law firm and basically started my company from the ground up because I saw an opportunity in the marketplace for attorneys and their clients to benefit from strategic counsel that actually incorporates media strategy and legal strategy, but also helps the attorneys deal with the ethics issues that might come about from talking about their cases, as well as the defamation issues that often come with talking publicly about pending matters.
I love it. That's a great story. So you talk about engaging with the court of public opinion. What exactly do you mean by that?
So I have a very structured definition of the court of public opinion. We may think of that as the media or just people generally. But for the work that I do and for the work that your listeners do, I would encourage them to adopt this definition, which is the group of people who may not be parties to a legal dispute, but whose perceptions of the dispute could affect how that dispute is resolved and the dispute's impact on a client's reputation or prosperity. So again, it's people who aren't necessarily involved in the case, but whose perceptions of that case could impact how the case is resolved or the reputation and prosperity of a litigant. So let me give you some examples. Obviously, yeah. The media typically is, again, target number one with the court of public opinion. They have the largest megaphone, they have the largest voice, It's an efficient way to reach large swaths of people who might not know about you or might not necessarily care until they find out about something regarding your client's case. But you also have, for example, non-legal executives of an adversary. You as an attorney could communicate through the media coverage you're getting and the way you're framing the lawsuit in the public. You could basically dare your adversary's executives to keep on fighting the case. And we see this all the time on the plaintiff side and the defendant side. We know there are many cases that settle because one party doesn't want to get to discovery, because they know if the other side asks the right questions, documents and information will be made public that are going to be a problem either for a defendant's or a litigant's reputation or their business. So that's one group of people that we're targeting. The general public, guess what? Jurors are made up of the general public. And I know that we don't always go to trial anymore, but you don't know when your case is going to be the kind of case that goes to trial. And jurors read the newspaper. Jurors think about your case well before they become jurors, when they're merely members of the public. And if you are able to undo bad publicity, or at least fight back against bad publicity that the other side may have gotten at your client's expense, you are very much attempting to rebalance the scales and take away any preconceived bias that jurors might have. And you could do this ethically as an attorney, but you have to be thinking down the road and thinking that, gee, you know what? People see these bad articles about my client. I could do something about that. I don't have to just let it fester and ferment for a year or two until the trial actually comes up. And there's also public figures, politicians, potential plaintiffs and defendants, anybody that could see a case and could act in a way that hurts your clients because your client is losing business or your client is getting dinged on their reputation. And on the flip side, people who might say, you know what, this case needs to be resolved fast, because we just can't deal with the reputation and business hit that our client might take or our company might take. So when you think broadly about that and that broad definition of the court of public opinion, you start to really see litigation and the media in a whole new light, because you see there's all these outside influences that can make a difference with how legal disputes and litigation are resolved.
So how might a lawyer use this to resolve a matter favorably for a client?
So the key for lawyers, what they really need to be thinking about, and certainly when they have help from their outside PR consultants or their inside PR people and colleagues, they need to be thinking about how to frame the case in a way that resonates with the public and the media. They need to be thinking about how can we tell a client's story in a way that, again, is ethical and we don't defame anybody, but that gets our client's side of the story out there. We forget as attorneys that we are almost always litigating in anonymity in terms of our court filings. Pacer is not Google. Reporters can't just search for a company's name and find the pleadings. So from a plaintiff's perspective, if you have the kind of case that you think is of public interest and is bringing to light certain information or allegations that you think the public deserves to know, then you should be thinking about how can you tell your client's story publicly and outside of the simple legal proceedings. I joke all the time, and reporters tend to nod their head when I say this in front of them, that for most reporters, interesting and newsworthy lawsuits are like needles in a haystack. They don't know the docket number. They don't know these cases unless someone tells them. Now, there are pacer ticklers, and there are methods that reporters have to find out information about cases. But for the most part, they don't know what's going on. And you and I know as attorneys, and certainly your listeners know, that the legal documents, the legal filings that we as lawyers make very often discuss and touch on important public issues that deserve their day in the spotlight. So attorneys should be thinking about, on the plaintiff side, how to bring these issues to light, how to get public attention for what they perceive to be interesting and noteworthy allegations and information. And on the defense side, we should be thinking, how do we rebut these claims? How do we attack these claims in a way that reassures our customers, our clients, our shareholders, whomever, our employees? that these allegations are not true, they're not what they seem to be, or otherwise there's nothing to see here, move along. And that's a challenge because there are certain allegations that tend to, let's say, pose problems for defendants. Any Me Too type allegations, you see the opioid litigation right now that's playing out this time, around the time this podcast is being recorded and probably for some time after. And you have these tough allegations that as you as a defendant and you as defense counsel need to really think about, and you can't just let it fester, and you can't just use the baloney phrase, we intend to vigorously defend the allegations. That says nothing. Of course you are. That's your job. You're being paid to do so. But you need to actually think a little more constructively about what you could say to rebut those claims.
So you talked about, you know, how to use the court of public opinion to help with your client. Now, talk to us a little bit about how you can do, you know, at the same time, help yourself as a lawyer to market yourself better, either to current clients, prospective clients, or referral sources.
There are very few things attorneys do in terms of a legal skill and technique to help a client, and at the same time is marketing for the lawyer and the law firm. But this certainly is one of those things. And the joke that I always make, and around the time I can still talk about Michael Avenatti and Stormy Daniels because it's still somewhere on them. My joke is, how many of you listeners do you think, how many of you think that Michael Avenatti is concerned right now about his pay-per-click campaign or his Yelp reviews? Probably not at all. Right. The answer is probably not at all, because he has so much credibility and so much awareness because of the high-profile case that he has with Stormy Daniels and his, shall we say, somewhat media savviness. I think now he's flown a bit too close to the sun with some of the bad PR that's come out against him. But that kind of prominence, attorneys who are prominent in their markets are prominent because they are prominent. They are out there. They are known entities. It's not just advertising on billboards. It's not just direct response marketing. It's not just pay-per-click. Attorneys who are out in the media talking about their cases are actively marketing themselves because they are showing prospective clients and referral sources exactly the kind of advocate they will be for a client. And when a lawyer goes out and tells his or her client's side of the story, assuming the client wants their story told, that attorney is also building a better relationship with that client. You are doing something that the client wants you to do that most attorneys don't know how to do or don't want to do, which is tell the story broadly outside of court, because most clients don't want to have happen to other people but happen to them. So you're getting out there, you're telling your client's story, they're happy. That could lead to more referrals. That can lead to favorable testimonials, favorable reviews online. And of course, every article you get is something that could be posted on your firm's website, your blog, retweeted on your Twitter, or posted on your social media feeds. It's great for search engine optimization. Some high-profile media outlets will link to the lawyers and the law firms that they discuss in an article about a case, which, of course, is fantastic. And also, it helps with just general search engine visibility. If you're Googling my name, I've been quoted in a New York Times article. That's some really stellar social proof that shows that someone at the New York Times thought that I knew what I was talking about, or someone at the local newspaper thought your case was newsworthy, and there you are, advocating for your client. You're not simply declining to comment. You're not simply saying things like you'll vigorously defend the case. And you're giving prospective clients and referral sources an idea of who you are as a lawyer. And that helps you stand out from the normal lawyer who's not getting that visibility. So again, you have this amazing ability to help persuade the media and the public to see your case in light, the best light in favor of your client, but you're also getting yourself out there as a lawyer. And that is really a 1-2 combination that doesn't happen often with lawyers and the work that lawyers do for their clients.
So let me ask you, because you mentioned him, you know, I guess if we were having this episode or taping this show 6 months ago, we might be saying, you know, Avenatti has done phenomenal, and he's, in your estimation, because this is in a sense what you do for a living, where did he go wrong? What did he do? Did he push it too far? What is your sense of what advice would you give a lawyer if you're looking at what Avenatti did?
Well, there's a couple of things. First, he's not able to escape his past. And any lawyer who is out there, you can't escape your past, especially if you are going to be the public face of a high profile and, can we say, politically oriented lawsuit. There, he had a target on his back. It was only a matter of time before entrepreneurial reporters and entrepreneurial adversaries started digging up public documents about his bankruptcy, about some disputes with his former business partners, about possible issues with his spouse or significant others. That stuff comes up because people are smart and they want to undermine your credibility. That happens all the time. So on one hand, you have to be careful of what has happened to you publicly as an attorney going out there. Secondly, I think that he enjoyed the limelight a little bit too much. It's great. It's a great rush to be on live TV. It's a great rush to open up the newspaper and see your name there. I've been there. I've done that. It's a really cool feeling. Many of the listeners may have had that feeling as well. But it gets to a point where there's overexposure and you become a target. And I think what happened was when he was going on CNN or MSNBC constantly, it became about him. It became about the attorney and not him. And when he was getting Vanity Fair wrote an article about him and he was talking about the facial moisturizers he uses, that was like, okay, dude, save that for the YouTube video or the live stream. It gives this impression that it's all about him and not about his client. And that could be a problem down the road. So I would say for attorneys to enjoy the opportunities you get, but don't engage the media so often that you become almost like a joke, that you become a cliche because you're out there every night. And guess what? In most lawsuits, that's not going to happen. This is arguably a once in a generation or perhaps once in a nation's history type legal issue. But nonetheless, you have to be careful about overexposure and putting a target on your back.
I totally agree. So putting that aside, you mentioned ethical concerns related to talking to the media. You mentioned the risk of defamation. Talk to us a little bit about that and what lawyers need to watch out for and be aware of when it comes to speaking with the media.
Yeah, so I give hour-long CLEs on the ethics of attorneys talking to the media. So I will try and condense that 60-minute presentation into about a minute or two. But let me say this. First of all, under Rule of Professional Conduct 1.6, you need to get your client's permission to talk publicly about your cases. Even if the content of your statements are already public, you still need to get that affirmative approval from your client to speak about their cases publicly. That's 1.6. Rule 3.6 is the core rule here that applies. It's called trial publicity. And basically, attorneys cannot make public statements that they know or reasonably should know would have a substantial likelihood of materially prejudicing an adjudicative proceeding. Substantial likelihood, materially prejudicing an adjudicative proceeding. The good news for attorneys is that adjudicative proceedings is a trial. It's not the entire litigation. It is the trial. The rule is concerned with protecting jurors from outside influences and outside evidence that isn't technically admitted and isn't what they can technically deliberate over in a trial. There are two huge safe harbors in that rule. One, an attorney can always talk about the claims, offenses, and defenses in the case. They can always talk about the content of the public record. And they can rebut negative publicity against their client as long as the attorney didn't create that publicity and as long as that rebuttal is narrow enough to just rebut the bad publicity and the core. So again, an attorney always can ethically talk about the claims, offenses, or defenses in their case and can always talk about the content of a public record. That is a huge safe harbor that almost swallows the rule. In terms of defamation, attorneys have to know that when they're talking about allegations, they have to say these are allegations. You can't assert as fact an allegation because if that allegation is not true, it's false and defamatory, you've just gotten yourself some liability for defamation. And one thing attorneys don't realize and they need to is that in many jurisdictions across the country, an attorney sending a copy of a complaint to a reporter as a matter of law will expose that attorney to defamation. It's a terrible rule, but the idea is that you and I and other lawyers, Guy, when we put our defamatory allegations into a complaint or a letter to the other side and we file it with the court or we send it to the other side, is protected by the litigation privilege to defamation because we need to be able to talk freely about claims and allegations in court documents. When those documents are relevant to a court case and they naturally arise in a court case, then we're covered. But courts typically say, you guy, when you send a copy of a complaint that you signed to a reporter, you are no longer doing something that's either irrelevant or that naturally occurs within a case. Thus, you don't get the protection of the litigation privilege, and you are technically republishing defamatory allegations without protection by this privilege. It's terrible case law in Pennsylvania, where I'm at. It's at the Pennsylvania Supreme Court level. So it's really bad case law. There are a number of ways around this. You can always tell a reporter to go to the docket and tell them the docket number and the filing number. You could have an outside person, if not me, the attorney, send them a complaint. But attorneys would be wise to not be the one sending complaints to reporters for that very reason.
Fascinating. Really, really interesting stuff. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I'd love to have you back on the show to talk more about this because it's really interesting and I think something that our listeners could really use. But before you go, what would be one piece of advice or an actionable takeaway that you can leave with our audience?
First of all, thank you. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, Guy. My takeaway would be for PR people, for marketers, and for lawyers, be an active reader of the news. And when you find news articles about legal disputes, read them and deconstruct them because they'll give you a blueprint for what that reporter is looking for, what that publication is looking for in terms of the legal disputes they cover. And you could understand a little bit more about how you could use the court of public opinion to help your clients and to market yourself. So again, be an active reader of articles and blog posts about lawsuits and see how you could take what those articles are about and use that in your own practice.
I love it. That's great advice. All right, Wayne. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure having you. We will, of course, put information, we'll put on your LinkedIn profile, your website, and your Twitter account on the show notes. For our listeners who enjoyed this episode, please make sure you go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast if you want to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And also to check out some of our past episodes. Wayne, thank you again, and everyone, have a great day.